Welcome to All About Books on NET Radio. I'm your host, Pat Leach, Director of Lincoln City Libraries. Today, I'm delighted to welcome as my guest, author Mary Pfeiffer. Mary's a psychologist specializing in women, trauma, and the effects of culture on mental health. She's the author of several New York Times bestsellers, including 1994's Reviving Ophelia, and now including her new book, Women Rowing North, Navigating Life's Current and Flourishing as We Age, which garnered placement on the New York Times bestseller list as soon as it was published in January 2019. Mary, I'm so happy to have you on All About Books. Welcome.
Thank you. I always love being on your show, Pat.
Thanks. Well, tell us about this new book, Women Rowing North, Navigating Life's Currents and Flourishing as We Age.
Well, I was inspired to write it because I always write about that which interests me most. And also I write about what I feel like I need to learn to understand the world I'm in. So I'm 71 now, and a lot of my friends are roughly my age. And we're in a new life stage. It's very different for us than it was for our mothers and my grandmothers. I mean, just for starters, many people at 65 are looking forward to perhaps 30 more years of life.
Oh, sure.
The other thing is, since we're baby boomers, we have very different expectations for our lives. We want to be learning and growing and living good lives and having rich experiences. So contrary to all the cultural stories about aging, my experience is, and this is, by the way, documented by statistics, that women my age are the happiest people around. And also that rather than being defined by their losses and their challenges, they're defining themselves by the great gifts that are coming their way. You know, if you look at the way the culture defines aging, it's almost entirely in terms of diminishment and devaluing. For example, theoretically, in the culture, the messages are older women aren't as pretty, they aren't as sexy, they aren't as useful, they aren't mothers anymore. They're likely to be crabby, and they're likely to be in the way. And the opposite story is just the case. Women my age tend to be incredibly engaged with the world and deeply useful to a variety of people. Oftentimes, for the first times in their lives, they have the leisure to move into creative work. Many times, they have the life skills to start accepting themselves and moving into a fuller, more authentic version of themselves. Also, because this life stage is such a almost daily combination of joy and sorrow, that particular oscillation between the two is catalytic for growth. And so one thing I say in Women Rowing North is we enter a portal that allows us enormous possibility for spiritual development, for growth of the moral imagination, for deepening of relationships, and for self-understanding. So I define this life stage in Women Rowing North as a stage with enormous potential for growth. One of the lines I use in this book is, emergencies call for emergent behavior. And you've had your own emergency with the death of Jerry, your husband. And when something like that happens, you have two choices. You can define yourself by grief and sorrow and live the rest of your life as a sort of truncated version of who you were earlier. Or you can make the choice to move into a new life, to go through the grieving, to go through the sadness and the pain and the anger, and then move into a person with a new way of defining her life. One of my friends put it this way. She said, when she lost her husband, she said, I'm walking around in a play that I call my new life.
I had marked an excerpt in your book. You write, many of us discover ways to experience bliss and awe when we are most in pain. Our losses and sorrows propel us toward that which is redemptive. We must find an emotional state to balance our despair. Great personal suffering can sometimes deepen our souls to the point they crack open and let in great beauty. And I think that that surprises people who haven't maybe experienced that depth of pain, who look on from outside and maybe often wonder, how does that person survive that? How do they get up every day and get out of bed and have breakfast and keep walking, essentially?
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I interviewed you in the book about Jerry. And one of the things I was struck with is, of course, 2 years after Jerry's death, which is when we did that interview, you were still very sad. You were still very angry. But you also were doing all sorts of things to balance all of that. Like one thing you were doing is helping other people who'd been in that same situation. And then the other thing you were doing, which is a very resilient and healthy thing to do, is you were moving into a new life and developing new friendships and doing new things. I loved interviewing you.
Oh,
that's one of my favorite interviews in the book, by the way.
Oh, thank you. That is so kind. The book is full of comments from other people from the interviews that you did. So clearly you talked to a lot of people. Were there any of those interviews that gave you a different perspective or led you to think about what this book would be about in a new way?
Well, a couple things. One is I had always seen gratitude as a kind of a virtue or a kind of a coping skill that, you know, you're better off every day if you focus on what you're grateful for than what you kind of wish you had but don't have. I mean, I knew all that, both in a personal way. I use gratitude every morning to begin my day. And I end my, when I'm going to bed at night, I fall asleep remembering things I'm grateful for that happened that day. But what I realized as I wrote this book is the people who are the most grateful are the people who have suffered the most. It's not the privileged people. It's not the people who have the easy lives. It's the people that have really, really been poor, had very serious health problems, are living lives that are, from an outsider's point of view, quite grim. And the reason they have the best gratitude skills is they have the most need for gratitude skills. They're a survival skill. So that was something that really surprised me. And an interesting way this comes up, when I've done a lot of interviews by now in Women Roy North, is the interviews will often say, well, of course, this is a book for privileged women. And actually, I feel almost the opposite. And I also think there's a kind of a strange prejudice in the idea that it's privileged people that experience happiness and joy and resilience, and that it's poor people and people who have very serious life struggles who are sort of victims of their lives and not able to be among the most grateful, resilient, and happy people. For example, I interviewed some women who came to me through the Malone Center in Lincoln. And none of these women had a great deal of money, and they'd all had pretty rough lives. They were African-American in Nebraska during a time when there was a lot of prejudice. They had sorrow in their lives, like many people. And the three women I interviewed, we sat together around a table, and we laughed and laughed. And they were so full of joy, and their descriptions of their lives were almost entirely positive. Deeply engaged with the world. One of the women was doing what she called porch activism. And when the weather was good enough, she would sit on her front porch as the children walked by her house to and from school. And she would call out a child and say, now you need to zip up your coat. It's a little too chilly for that. Or if she heard a child say a swear word, she'd walk down to the sidewalk. She said, oh, let me talk to you a little bit about that. And she felt that, and then sometimes she'd just walk on the sidewalks and see the kids. And she'd just stop them and say, now, how was your school day today? And she'd encourage the kids to talk to her and talk to each other. And she said, that's really important for those children. It's good for them to see an old lady out who's interested about their lives every day. So I was really, really interested that our cultural conceptions of who's happy and who isn't happy in some ways can almost be turned on their heads. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, that I don't think we all should have good health care and decent living conditions, and that obviously if you're hungry, it's harder to be happy than if you have adequate food supply. But it does mean that our assumptions about happiness and who's happy are not really limited by income and privilege.
What is it plugging into, do you think, that's leading this book to be so successful?
Well, a couple things. I think one is I'm just on the cusp of the boomers. Mm-hmm. I was born right after the war. There's a lot of us coming up. Mm-hmm. And because we are the generation we are, that always we're the pig in the python. We've gone through our lives as this giant demographic bulge, mm-hmm. redefining the way culture does everything because we want to do it our way. And I think we're the same with getting older. We've got, for example, if I ever go into an assisted living facility, I want to make sure that it has sushi. Well, that's not something most assisted living facilities serve today. We have a lot of ideas about how we want to do our lives, but there hasn't really been much written that talks about we need a new paradigm. So much of what's written is about the diminishment mm-hmm. side, like how to stay young, how to stay healthy. I'm making quite a different argument, which is that while attitude isn't everything, it's almost everything, and that happiness is actually not about whether or not we're particularly healthy or young-looking or sexy. It's about, in fact, our intention to be happy, the skill set we've built up over 7 decades that we can use to be happy. So I think it's quite a different message. And I think, of course, all of us want to be happy, and all of us want to see our lives as filled with potential for joy and bliss and sure. growth and connection. And so the women I wrote about were all very resilient in their own ways. And they're pretty inspirational, really. They inspired me to feel like, well, I can do this life stage better than I thought I could, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, going into it, having a new kind of expectation.
Absolutely.
I know that you've been on the road quite a bit promoting this book. I heard you on Terry Gross's Fresh Air the other night.
Oh, did you?
I did. And how does the work of promoting this book interact with what your next project is?
Well, I'm really excited. My daughter, Sarah Gillum, who's living in Canada right mm-hmm. now, but she was a high school girl when I wrote Reviving Ophelia 25 years ago. And she and I are bringing out a 25th year edition of Reviving Ophelia.
Ah.
And it's coming out this June. And we wrote really a new book. We did focus groups, interviews. We sent that old book all over the country to bright teenage girls and said, just go through this book, X out everything that's boring to you. Tell us what we're leaving out. Tell us what should be in here that isn't. So we did a lot of research, focus groups, interviews, and we put together a whole new book that has some of the old. The needs of girls haven't changed. The basic developmental issues of girls haven't changed. But the culture's changed a great deal, and what girls are coping with has changed. So we had a lot of fun reformulating that book, and Sarah and I are going to have a good time promoting it, and we're really looking forward to working on it this
summer. You'll be
summer.
Out on the road together then?
Well, we'll do a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm not out on the road much anymore. Mm-hmm. One of the things I say in the new book is a great thing about being 71 is I know what to delete as much as I know what to add. And I've got the power of no. If I don't want to do something, I don't do it. And I've got the power of yes, which means I listen to my heart and I try to do what will make me deeply happy. And speaking and traveling in airports does not make me deeply happy anymore.
How does all of the writing that you do impact your reading life?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know as it has much impact, except I'll tell you what I read. I love biography. Mm. Biography, from my point of view, is sort of the story of the individual human character up against a culture, whatever that means. It's what we do with what we're given. And I just finished the biography of Frederick Douglass.
Oh, that's
on my list. I don't know
if you
read that. It's really, my God, what a phenomenal man he was. And right now, I'm reading a book called Code Girls. And it's a beautiful book. I forget the author. Code Girls is the name. But the thing that is just so beautiful about that book is my mother was a code cracker in the war.
Oh, is that and right?
And she was a Navy officer in San Francisco. And she mentioned briefly one time that she went back to Smith College for some training but she didn't say what it was for. Well, reading Code Girls, I saw that Smith College was where they trained the early code crackers. Then, one time when my dad had been drinking a little bit, he whispered to me, "Did you know your mom helped break the Japanese codes?"
Oh, my.
And I asked my mom about that, and she goes, "Oh, I was working in the Navy, but I wasn't directly involved." Well, now I realize she was directly involved, but she was sworn to secrecy for the best rest of her life. So this Code Girls book is teaching me so much about my mother. Like, for example, one thing I learned is when she went in the Navy in 1942, that's the first year the Navy admitted women. The Navy had great concerns that if they admitted women, the women would never return to their homes and be mothers and homemakers. And they were also sure that there'd be all this sexual activity between women and men, and women would become promiscuous if they were allowed in the Navy. So they didn't want women in. But the minute women could join, my mom signed up, and she was a very bright mathematician. She had a master's in biochemistry, and she became a code girl.
Wow. What a story.
I know. So it's so much fun to read. I love reading. I love this idea that sitting in Lincoln, Nebraska in February with the snow and ice, there's a whole world out there I can discover just sitting in my recliner.
That's right. All the lives you get through the books that you read. Well, Mary, it has been my pleasure to have you as my guest today on All About Books. Thank you so much for coming in.
I enjoyed it, as I always do, Pat.
Thank you. Mary Pfeiffer has been my guest today on All About Books. Her book, Women Rowing North, Navigating Life's Currents and Flourishing as We Age, was published by Bloomsbury in 2019. You've been listening to All About Books on NET Radio. Podcasts of this and other programs are available online. Visit netnebraska.org/radio. For All About Books, I'm Pat Leach.